Good morning. Well, this morning's edition of the Rich Urban Show. I'm your host, Richard Urban. We bring you news and views from the UMKH principal point of view. We're very happy to have Bill Ridenour on today, running for West Virginia House of Delegates District 100. So please introduce yourself or tell us about your family, whatever you'd like to share.
Yes, I'm Bill Ridenour, obviously. I am the current delegate for District 100. I'm running for re-election. I am a retired Marine, a retired Defense Intelligence Officer, and I have focused my efforts on trying to make sure that West Virginia is headed in the right direction. I'm very much interested in the upcoming election for on the national side, because obviously that's going to be a major determination as to where not only our state goes, but where our country goes, obviously. And we need to, I think, continue to push West Virginia in the right direction. I think it's been moving in the right direction. I think that with upcoming leadership, I believe that will be Patrick Morrissey as our governor. I think we're going to be making some massive strides in West Virginia, and I want to make sure that we assist in trying to get those strides moving forward as expeditiously as possible in the legislature.
Great. So what do you think, like, the biggest issue is, like, facing West Virginia right now?
I would say one of our biggest issues, and it's hard to identify a specific issue that's the biggest. We have a major workforce participation issue in West Virginia. We need additional businesses in West Virginia. We've eliminated basically our population decline that had been going on for several decades, and I think we are turning the corner on that. A lot of folks are moving into the state, particularly in Jefferson County, Berkeley County, and a few other places. We're responsible for much of the growth.
Mm-hmm.
But we really need to try and resolve some of our workforce participation. That will help, I think, our overall economy. We can do that by several different legislative means. I think Patrick has some plans to try and improve that workforce participation as well.
Okay. Well, let me interject a second. Issue. Yeah.
Sure.
So I assume you're talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, workforce participation, the fact that a lot of, I guess it's mostly young men, maybe, and young women, don't participate in the workforce. Maybe they do occasional labor, but the question is, I guess, why is it alcohol or drugs or opioids?
There's a number of reasons, and those are reasons we have to address. Part of the issue is our current unemployment mechanisms, whereby you can work for 6 months, then be off for 6 months. That is problematic because it tends to encourage people to only participate for very short periods of time. And when I'm saying that we have a workforce participation rate, it's a major problem. We have the worst workforce participation in the country.
Can you tell us, like, what percentage is not
about 55%?
How much?
About 45% of our population is not that could be working is not working.
45%. So it wouldn't include, like, retirees or people who are not of working age.
It would not include. Yeah, these are individuals who could be participating.
Wow.
They are choosing not to participate for various reasons. Part of that, though, as I said, this is a multifaceted issue. We have a lot of folks who are what we call working off the books. They are doing handyman jobs. They're doing construction jobs. They're not being reported as such. And it's in part because of our taxation structure, which does need to be resolved. It's also because of our regulations, our licensing requirements. All of those need to be addressed to facilitate people working and being able to work within our economic system as opposed to working outside the economic system.
Okay.
It's not that West Virginians are not interested in working. It's that they may be interested in working in ways that are going to be more profitable to themselves if they don't have to pay taxes or if they don't have to go through regulations and everything.
Yeah. What about the fact, as you may have noticed in our like nonprofit work, we emphasize a lot about the family and like absence for marriage, that kind of thing. So I've been positing, you know, and talking to different people and candidates and just in general about the fact that, you know, about 50% of births in West Virginia now are outside of marriage is a major driver of all societal issues. And I would posit and say, including this one, because I believe that if you grow up in a more stable male, female married family, not just I believe, it's quite well documented, you're going to have a lot more stable life and a better participation in society, more civic participation, et cetera. Would you agree or disagree with that? Or what?
I would tend to agree, yes. There are a lot of families that are single mother, sometimes single father families, and they have some difficulties being able to participate in the workforce fully. And we need to try and resolve that. I think that a family structure is very important for our society in general, but it also does enhance our economy. And I wholeheartedly encourage marriage and the focus on the family as an institution. So those are, I think, critical things that we need to do in the legislature and not undermine families or undermine the family structure.
Okay. Yeah. And talking about, well, a somewhat related issue, it's related for everybody, taxes. So I've been, working on the tax issue. In fact, I have a tax case I own like two properties ongoing. But what I'm getting at is, would you support a cap on property tax assessments going up in a year? Many states have it. So what happened is it caught my attention. I have some vacant properties, also the house on one property, basically, where it went up this tax year, just the one we got are paying for now, 130%, not 30%, double and 30%. And even at the tax office said, oh, that's not illegal. And I'm challenging it and it's ongoing. But my point is that, sometimes things, in my opinion, observation, are corrupt. So having a cap maybe could help limit corruption, or what do you think?
I agree. There has been a proposal in the past legislative session a couple of times. I don't think I co-sponsored, but I would be, I think, because I already had enough co-sponsors. It didn't move, as far as I know, through committee. I will be absolutely in support of something like that. I also want to see if there can be some kind of additional limits on our property taxes. I very much want to get rid of our personal property taxes. That will take a constitutional amendment like we attempted to do in 2022, and I fully supported. We're going to try it again, I hope, in 2026, because that tax definitely needs to go away. There are other things we need to do with our tax structure. Our income taxes are still too high. I want to see those reduced as much as we possibly can. However, we have an issue with our bordering states in that we have what are called tax reciprocity agreements. Okay. And if we lower our taxes too much, then those other states will void those tax reciprocity agreements, and individuals working in Maryland would then be paying Maryland income taxes. And if we don't want our citizens being forced to pay income taxes in other states, we want to try and preclude that. So there's ways I think that we can reduce our overall taxes, keep just enough of an income tax so that our West Virginia citizens are not going to be punished by paying in other states. And see if that, I think, is really going to enhance our business environment. That's something I know that Patrick Morrissey is very much in favor of. He's looking real hard at what we can do. We were able to do a 2% income tax reduction in this past special session. I wanted a 5%. 2% was all we could get. The Democrats introduced an amendment to support a 5% income tax reduction, and the Freedom Caucus and the conservatives voted to support that. It was defeated, unfortunately, and then the Democrats, being Democrats, immediately objected to the 2% tax bill that we eventually passed. So that seemed to indicate some degree of hypocrisy, but I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like. I would argue also, lower income folks, like ourselves, me and my wife, basically only pay very little personal income tax. And be it as it may, I'm sure if you're higher income, you pay a lot more. But my point being, the property tax is very aggressive, because whether you make $1 or $1 million, you got to pay your property tax. So that's a huge hit,
I'm not diminishing that at all. I just wanted to mention that we do have an overall tax effort, tax reduction effort that we're looking at. Those other taxes, we also want to look at the types of fees we're imposing a lot of times. Sometimes we're not imposing sufficient fees, like in Jefferson County. I don't think our impact fees are anywhere near what they should be for these large scale builders. But for property taxes, yes, I want to find ways. And this sounds like a good way. I mean, we've discussed it in the legislature before. I'm hoping we can do some kind of a cap on the property taxes and find other ways to reduce our property taxes.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm looking at is a potential homestead exemption, a change to the homestead exemption. So it moves from a flat $20,000, which is really good for folks down in Mingo, Wayne counties, where, their property values are maybe 10% of what it ups.
The whole house might be 50,000, where here it's 150,000.
But up here in Jefferson, 20,000 really does not go a long way. I mean, we need to look at, finding ways to make that a percentage, or find, some means to ensure that people who have these major property values are not are actually receiving some benefit from that type of homestead exemption. So we're going to work on a lot of those. We're really going to work with the incoming governor to see how we can reduce our taxes overall, because again, that helps our overall economy. And when we help our overall economy, that hopefully will also bring folks not only into the state, but get greater workforce participation.
Okay. I wanted to ask one related tax issue. So I'm also working on the excess levy issue, which, by the way, I pose, that's 40% of our property tax. It's very non-transparent. There's a new required law that you guys passed in 2021. Well, I guess you weren't there. That requires a detailed list of all the salaries. And I just got from the superintendent the report, and lo and behold, where's the list of salaries? It was due September 30th. The point being that they waste a lot of money. And actually, I was shocked to find, quickly looking through what he sent me yesterday, that apparently they got 40, if I read it correctly, 47 million more than what they from the levy over the last several years. It's crazy. Anyway, do you support this crazy excess levy that we're going to vote on again November 5th here in Jefferson County?
No, I in Jefferson County, and obviously I'm a state delegate, and I have just as much right as you do to vote for or against a levy, but I don't see the point of the levy. I see the point of raising the impact fees within Jefferson County for builders, so that we don't have $1 going to our schools. I mean, does not make any sense to me at all.
Well, I think part of that is, I was at a commission meeting a couple months ago, is that this enrollment's level and projected to decline. So my understanding is that the impact fees are supposed to be for impact of increased children. So I was also at the last Board of Education meeting some 2 weeks ago, and that also came up. And it's not clear, although everyone knows there's houses being built, it's not clear how many people would be added to school system, if any, because we don't know if people have one child, two child, no child. So that's a little unclear, you know.
We don't know, but we are building two schools now up near Shepherdstown. there should be a way for us to project out based on the number of houses.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like this is the first time that houses have been built around urban areas in the United States. I mean, there are ways to project those out. And I have to believe that we're going to see an increased enrollment in our public schools based on the number of housing units that are going in. Thousands of housing units should mean at least hundreds of additional students.
That's true. Although, I think that's a mixed bag. I think it was like 13 to 15,000. I came here 8 years ago before, because I had a friend, he wanted to build something. He was like completely discouraged when he found out that he couldn't even put a brick in the ground until he paid 13,000. Now I was talking to one of the other candidates for commission, Kara Keys, and she gave some clarity because she's good on that area. It's apparently around 2,000, but it doesn't go to the schools though this time. But anyway, all right. Yeah,
as far as I know, it's $1 of the impact fees goes to the schools.
It's very difficult for me to reconcile that. But maybe we'll move to other issues, if that's okay.
Okay.
There's a lot of issues. I mean, so I noticed you introduced a bill that popped up on my social media that would say that, how do you say, West Virginia, if the president was assassinated, God forbid, or something like that happened, or there was obvious repression of a fair election, then we will not recognize the results. Do you want to say anything about that? Or what it is?
I don't think the vast majority of West Virginians want to see our presidential election decided by an assassination of the leading candidate for president at this time.
I mean, not obviously.
And the responsibility falls to the current government to protect him. And they have not been doing anywhere near the job that they should be. I've unfortunately have a lot of experience in working against terrorists. I have looked at tens of thousands of terrorist attacks. There are a lot of things going on with the two assassination attempts that appear to be extremely suspicious. And there appears to be a deliberate effort to not provide President Trump with sufficient security. So that's the responsibility of the current party that's in power. It's incumbent upon them to protect both President Trump and when he was still running, RFK Jr. Kennedy was potentially as much under a threat as President Trump was.
Yes.
So my original resolution included RFK. When he withdrew from the race, it no longer made sense to include him. But we should not ever allow our elections to be determined by assassination or
Absolutely.
By political prosecutions and incarceration. And I mean, the prosecutions that have been going on against President Trump have been blatantly political.
Yes.
The New York Attorney General came into office focused specifically on politically prosecuting President Trump. And the conviction is not only outrageous, but dangerous in that it not only increases the potential threat to him by inciting people, but also facilitates his incarceration. And it's going to be very difficult to protect the president in a prison system in New York. So those are the types of things that spurred me to do this. I'm not here to make President Trump the president. That needs to be based exclusively on a free and fair election. We should not be doing anything that prevents a free and fair election. And assassination and incarceration or political prosecutions significantly impact the ability of any candidate to run. So those are things that we need to focus on and make sure that those parties that are responsible for either those that protection or for those types of political prosecutions understand that if they engage in those types of activities, they are not going to get the result that they want. They're not going to win the presidency or get their preferred candidate in. That's no longer going to be an option for them. The other part of it is, frankly, dealing with election fraud and election interference. Yeah. And I don't specify in there that it's either Republican or Democrat. That's completely nonpartisan. If a group of MAGA Republicans decides to recruit citizens from Ohio, from New York, from West Virginia to vote for President Trump, and it flips Pennsylvania over to the Republicans, when if it was a legitimate effort, it would have gone to the Democrats, we wouldn't recognize that either. That we do not want an unfair election in any way for either party.
Yeah. So that's switching a little,
is interesting.
By the way, is that getting any traction in the legislature?
We did not have time in the special session to review it in committee and put it to the floor for a vote. There were quite a few co-sponsors. There were more that wanted to co-sponsor, but we closed down the session before because we had 80, I think we ended up with 86 or 89 bills that came through. And the governor continued to add bills while we were in the special session, which is not the appropriate way to run a special session. Yeah. Special session should be designed for emergencies, not for regular business.
Speaking of the governor, what about the fact that the governor vetoed the bill that would have provided vaccination choice for private school students? What's your take on that?
I'm pretty outraged at that. We supported, and actually the Freedom Caucus, the conservatives within the legislature, the House in particular, strongly supported a more robust bill. This continues to be we continue to be an outlier in that we're not offering protections for religious or philosophical exemptions. This is an outlier in the state. Like, we're one of maybe four other states that continue to preclude any kind of religious or philosophical objections.
And Mississippi had a major win in court a year ago. I was trying to point out, and I'll mention now, that it's coming forward, you know, that hopefully that case, I don't know, part of it was brought by Adele Bigtree and his organization, but they had a major win where Mississippi, which is the most similar state, as you know, to West Virginia for the lack of vaccination freedom, if you want to call it that, medical freedom, they were forced now to offer medical exemptions. So we should... one argument I would give to the legislators such as yourself, and of course I know you're very supportive, but in general, is that, you know, we should preempt the fact that we're going to be forced to do it anyway. We should put it into law, you know what I mean? That we have that.
It would certainly help. We put forth a major effort to get that done. The Freedom Caucus and others canvassed our delegates as hard as we could. We got something through the House, the Senate, which I won't talk about how awful the Senate is, changed that and made it, watered it down. We were left with the choice of nothing or a very watered down bill. We felt it was incumbent to at least get something done. We passed that bill. And then Jim Justice vetoed it, which was extremely disappointing, given that the vast majority of our people want this. It's the legislature and the governor that have been precluding this. It's not the people. The people want this for themselves.
Yeah. And I think Justice has a cozy relationship. Hopefully, you know, should Patrick Morrissey be elected, it'd be better with the WVU Health. And he relies on what they're saying. And of course, they're all rah, 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 and they make money off of vaccinations too.
Well, I really can't comment on that. To me, relationships with companies, with entities should not be the basis for how you're making a decision. It should be based upon the values of your constituents and yourself as you're relating those to your constituents.
Right.
So, and that's what I'm all about. That's what I'm going to continue to be all about.
Okay. So let's talk over a second. You're talking about election integrity. Should we be beefing up in any way or change our election integrity? I know we have those so-called ballot marking devices now. We've gotten rid of the paper ballots, I think, everywhere. But if I'm wrong, correct me. Should we have those? Do those introduce security concerns?
I don't think they necessarily introduce security concerns. I believe we actually do have paper ballots. I've talked for hours and hours with the Secretary of State's office. I'm reasonably confident in West Virginia. There are still a number of things I think we need to do. I'm part of an election integrity caucus within the legislature, House and Senate, and we're continuing to work on that. We wanted additional measures put in this the 2024 legislative session, but the House leadership, House and Senate leadership, decided that everything that we were doing was going to be effective in 2025 after this election. I disagreed with that, but we weren't able to overcome that.
Yeah, let me ask.
We do have paper ballots. They come out of the machine as paper ballots.
That's true.
From checking that, from talking with the Secretary of State's office, those are far more effective ensuring that the voter actually gets who he wants, because too many times when you have a direct paper ballot, they mismark. They either put a check, they put circles around the block, they don't do the proper marking, and their votes are not counted.
Yeah. Okay. One question I have a little unclarity myself. Maybe you can help. The mail ballot. So I know in 2020, anybody could get one. Basically just said, oh, I can't go out, and they got one. Now I was looking on the mail ballot application. It doesn't explicitly say you need a doctor's note, but it also, I was getting the impression talking to candidates for Secretary of State and stuff, and some people, that it's no longer like anybody can get a mail ballot. But can you? Like, if I just wanted a mail ballot, can I get one? Or do you know?
Not, my understanding is no. And that's, again, from talking with the Secretary of State's office at length. We don't have the mail-in ballot issues that other states do. Mm-hmm. We didn't really do that as much in 2020 as other states, but we're more restrictive now. It's more of a absentee ballot issue, and it's for those individuals who do have difficulties making it to the polling places. And there are a number of constituents that I have, and I've discussed this with them. They have very valid reasons, and they're applying, and I've helped them apply, several of them.
I don't have an issue with that, but I was just wondering if, like in 2020, I went on there, and that language is still there, but it seems to be a little different now. It said basically if you didn't have to certify with a doctor, and if you said you were afraid to get COVID, in other words, anybody could get a mail ballot. So I was wondering if that needs to be clear. I agree with you. It should only be for legitimate reasons.
Yeah, that's something that I'll relook at, because I want to make sure that we don't have the types of mail-in issues that we see in other states, because what we don't want are the types of issues where you have ballot harvesting or mass mail-in ballots sent out. We need to, that's part of a free and fair election system. Yeah. We need to make sure that we're not allowing the potential for election fraud. And that's something that we as West Virginia, I think, have done a reasonably good job. But we think in the Election Integrity Caucus that there are additional things that we must do to ensure that our elections are completely free and fair.
Yeah. I was asking, I was interviewing Mac Warner because he's running for governor. And anyway, I was asking about the why they use clarity voting. And he said they didn't, but they do. So clarity voting is like election reporting. Like until 2018, it looked to me we used a homegrown system. And then they use this third-party system for election reporting. So I asked why. He said we didn't. But then I looked again, and I'm pretty sure it's called clarity voting. I'm not saying it's necessarily there's anything going on, but why are we using a third-party system? Doesn't that introduce more vulnerabilities, yeah. You know.
I'll have to check with the Secretary of State's office on that. I know that we withdrew from the interstate agreement in part because the interstate agreement was facilitating fraud. And, you know, we didn't, obviously, we want to avoid fraud. And so Mac Warner made the decision, and I wholeheartedly agree with it, to withdraw from that interstate
what
agreement.
What is interstate agreement? What does it say?
I'd have to relook at what the name of it is, but it was an agreement that looked at how voters were put onto and removed from ballots, or not ballots, from the voting registration system.
Oh, like if someone moves, something like that.
Yeah, things, yes. And by withdrawing, as most states really have at this point, because of problems with that system, we were able to remove tens of thousands of people who should not have been continued to be registered in the state
thing.
Of West Virginia.
And I wasn't implying there was any fraud, but just trying to reduce
I'll
any
check
possibility.
Into that. Yeah.
Okay. What about one thing that I've kept asking about over the last couple of years, and I've asked you before? We never fixed the emergency declaration powers of the governor. Like, I know it was, and this was, I know, before you were a delegate. It was the House had a good resolution to limit it to, I think, 60 days. And then the Senate, like he said, eviscerated it, completely destroyed it, and the wrongly named Trump, I guess now the former senator, is he still senator? I think he's not running. He, like, eviscerated it and whatever. Anyway, it was never fixed. So if it should ever occur again that these resolutions are made by the governor, there's nothing to hold back it going on forever. Do you
we
have any
thoughts on
that?
This year. Yeah, mm-hmm. We did something this year in 2024.
It passed.
Yes. Yes, it did. And it made it through the governor. It was, as usual, watered down over on the Senate side. It was not as strong as what the Freedom Caucus and other conservatives wanted on the House side. But we got it down, I believe, to a 60-day declaration, and he has to check back with the legislature, I believe, every 30 days.
Okay.
We're going to fight to get that reduced even further in the upcoming session. The way that COVID was handled was not well done during the 2020-2021 timeframe.
I'd say.
And I actually have a resolution in that I'm going to continue to push to require a comprehensive investigation of not only West Virginia's, but the national COVID response. We have not done a good job overall throughout the federal government and in the other states to examine, you know, the origins, what happened, and how we responded, and what went right and what went wrong. And far more things went wrong than went right. And we need to understand what those lessons learned were and actually apply those to how we would deal with any kind of future pandemic.
Right.
And unfortunately, the UN continues to push the pandemic issue. And there seems to be some politics behind those pandemic warnings and everything. So we need to ensure that we're prepared for any kind of a pandemic declaration by anyone.
Right. And another thing is the anyone objective will see that these vaccines have been very harmful. And there's still in some places, like I think Denmark, and interestingly, which you usually think of as a liberal country, but they're out, you know, but we're still pushing them in the U.S. Should West Virginia be pushing COVID vaccines? I mean, meaning like places like WVU Health, or like every other day your pharmacy calls, if you got your COVID thing? These are harmful. Why are we being, you know, society still, or West Virginia still pushing that?
Absolutely not. We should not be pushing these at all. The harm, as has been in several different studies, is greater than the benefit. This is something that, again, should be part of a comprehensive investigation. My father died from the vaccine. One of my lieutenant colonels that worked for me in the Pentagon also appears to have died from the vaccine. He got it, marathon runner. He was on a short run, and he died of a heart attack. The guy was absolutely the picture of health. Poster Marine guy was terrific, and his loss was a huge blow. And it, the only thing I could say is it had to have been from the vaccine. The guy was as healthy as you could possibly get. We should not be pushing these on our citizens. Too many people are being influenced by what the federal government would refer to as a misinformation campaign if this was something they opposed.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, you know, the CVS pharmacy call, hello, gotten your COVID, or the Weiss pharmacy. If you have any prescription for anything, like my wife has some, you know, they're calling to push this stuff.
Right. And this is not something that we as a state government should be supporting. If people want to get that vaccine, they can get it. But we should not be trying to push people to get that.
Yeah.
And if they're state supported, I mean, there should be some kind of restrictions for their ability to push things that are going to benefit them financially.
Yeah. Well, one of the other candidates was telling me, I didn't know this, that the largest employer in West Virginia is WVU Health. But I'm sure they're pushing it. But I'm not pretty sure they're pushing it. Anyway, we're coming toward the end of the
our
time.
Our state government is actually our largest employer, which is another issue that we have within
the state government, not WVU Health.
Yeah.
Okay.
And their WVU Health is not included within that state government. But yeah, our state government is massive.
Wow. All right. Well, we've covered a number of issues. Is there anything else that we didn't cover that you would like to talk about to emphasize that we haven't covered or that you'd like to share with the voters?
Well, I think we need to do a much better job in terms of our public education. In my district, we have probably close to 1,500 students that have left the public education system or in charter schools, homeschools, private schools. We're seeing families fleeing our public school system, and it's because we remain 50th and we continue to pour massive amounts of money into our public schools, and we're not getting the results that we need. We need a much better public school system. I'm an advocate for school choice, for the HOPE scholarship.
Yes.
Because I believe that will help, that type of competition will help the public schools improve, because they want those students in the public school system. But we need to do a much better job focusing on how our kids are educated and ensuring that they are getting a education that is going to prepare them in the future for their role in the real world. And I don't think we're doing a good job of that.
Yeah, I think
go ahead. No, go
no,
ahead.
I was just going to say that kind of looks back around in my, so I was volunteering for one teacher at Blue Ridge last year, a kindergarten teacher, just like, so I would go in like once a week. Anyway, in talking with her, one of the big issues for all teachers is, yeah, pay is an issue, but actually I believe a bigger issue is the breakdown of discipline in the classroom. And I know the legislature tries to address it, but it's not, in a way, that's not really their job, in my opinion. Meaning, not saying it's bad, you need some guidelines, but it really goes back to the breakup of families, because if you're living in with your mom and dad, you're much less likely to have issues than if you're living in all kinds of other situations. Or what do you think?
I would agree. A family structured, traditional family structure significantly helps students achieve more. I would say that we did some things in this past legislative session that help encourage families and students to ensure their student is behaving properly. We had situations where a disruptive student who was preventing education from occurring in a class, being removed and immediately put back into the class and engaging in a repetitive behavior.
Mm-hmm,
and the schools felt they had no means to prevent that. So the legislation we passed, you know, basically helped remove that disruptive student, put him in a position where he could receive some individualized attention, and then allowed the rest of the class to continue and get some education. The amount of disruption that's been going on in our schools has been significant, and it really does impact, as you had alluded to, the education of the other students. So we've got to do something about that. We will try and look at additional processes in the future.
Yeah, and from the societal perspective, you know, I always advocate generational change through promoting abstinence for marriage and marriage. And I'm not saying, you know, you, the state, are supposed to. I mean, that's the preferred kind of education. But in general, if we can all over the board, across the board, spread that kind of message, and it's not so hard to do because I'm in that field and it doesn't cost a lot of money, but just having the wherewithal that that's important and that that provides a great opportunity for you, you know, to hear about that, and it'll help in the long run.
Yeah. I believe strongly in the traditional family culture that our nation has had for centuries and has unfortunately been disassembled over the last few decades. And we need to look at how we reestablish that type of structure and the morality that goes with that structure.
Okay. So I think, I guess we've covered everything unless you want a very, very final thought. Yeah.
No, I'm running really to try and advance, like I said, not only West Virginia as a state, but the cultures and values of the people of our state and our county and the constituents that I have. And my hope is that we can really make West Virginia a place that people are going to want to come to, that are going to want to stay in, because we've lost population. We have our youth that are leaving. We need to have the jobs here. And I'm very focused on trying to get more businesses into this area, into the state writ large. Not everything needs to be in Jefferson County. We need to make sure that our economy is growing around the state so that the people in these communities out in other areas of West Virginia have something that their kids can eventually do. I also am a huge supporter of our farms, and I want to make sure that we're continuing to protect our farms. So I'm working with our agriculture commissioner, Kent Leonhardt, and other delegates to see what we can do to improve our farmland protection programs, see if there's ways that we can enhance that so that farmers and others who want to farm can, in fact, have the opportunity. We need our food grown here. This in the United States, there's an effort by international entities to take over control of our food system. The Chinese, Brazilians, others are taking over large swaths of our agricultural system. And we need our local farmers to have the ability to grow. We need those farms.
Yeah.
And I'm very focused on that. And I'm trying. We were able to pass something about drought relief in this past special session.
I saw that. And a related thing would be the solar issue. I know we lost some prime farmland, like the Blake thing. I know that's not primarily a state issue, although one of our delegates, as you're well aware, was pushing being able to put solar anywhere by right. Do you have any opinion on that?
I'm going to be doing what I can to restrict that type of industrial solar, the commercial solar that's going on, in terms of requiring appropriate setbacks. That's going to be a tough fight because there are entities within our legislature that are committed to solar. I'm going to be trying to oppose that, and I don't want to see the windmills that are being jammed into places like Hardy County and other places around the state. Those are awful. They absolutely contribute nothing to the state of West Virginia. And the individuals that are pushing these, if they want them, they should have them on their own property and not inflict those on the property values of the people around them. This has been a extremely hot button issue in Jefferson County. Now that we've seen this cable town solar monstrosity, and the people absolutely hate it. I don't think I've run into a single individual who's in favor of the type of solar that we're getting. Some people are okay with it from a property rights perspective, but the property values of the people around those solar fields has diminished dramatically. And it's not something that we need to be doing in Jefferson County. It's going to impact our primary industry in Jefferson, which is tourism, and we need to be trying to protect tourism. So we need to push back on this. We also need to make sure that we're not stuck with the bill for cleaning these things up, because they, if the federal subsidies for these go away, and the way our federal budget trajectory is going, we are going to be in a massive fiscal crisis if we're not already in one right now. And if those subsidies go away, those solar fields no longer of any value. My concern is that the companies that have installed these things are going to declare bankruptcy and leave Jefferson County and other places around our state with the cleanup responsibilities, and that is going to be massive. So I'm going to be working on trying to increase the bond required for those entities so that if those things are, if they do go bankrupt or if they do go, if those are no longer viable, then that bond can be used to help clean up those things. I'm very concerned about the contamination potential for our groundwater.
Yeah, and all the soil ran off on the bike thing. Okay, a lot of it ran off because I saw it running into the river. I reported it too.
Right. Yeah, I've been down on in Evett's Run, leading down into the Shenandoah. And I've had many constituents report to me that they've seen green, brown, and orange runoff into the Shenandoah River. I'm very concerned that that will impact the Shenandoah and the Potomac. But I'm also concerned that that may get down into the Chesapeake. And then we as West Virginia are sued again for the Chesapeake Bay, and that we're stuck with a massive bill. And that's, again, something that the people who are advocating this have not been looking at. And if that happens, then any potential gain that came from solar will have been completely lost. So we need to rethink this completely. I want us to stop trying to push this type of so-called renewable energy onto people. We need to stop trying to enforce a climate change agenda on a state that really wants to focus on other means to power their homes, their businesses, et cetera.
Okay, well stated. All right, well, I want to thank you very, very much for your time today. We'll put this out. It'll be under the Rich Urban Show on any podcast platform, also at our own site, visionroot.org. I do thank you for your time today and for coming on.
Okay, it was great talking to you, Richard, and I really appreciate the time.
All right, okay. All right, all the best. Okay, so thank you for joining us today. We'll see you next time.